I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, with us in Washington, D.C. Also in Washington, Paul Butler. He is a law professor at George Washington University. He's heading to Georgetown University next month. Also here in D.C., Gautam Nagesh. He is an editor for Congressional Quarterly and founder of the sports website Stiff Jab. And in New York City, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Jimmy, take it.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Good. What's up, man?
Gautam.
Yo.
Gee, what's up, man?
It's lonely here in New York.
P-Dog, what's good, man? We got Paul Butler in the house. What's up, Prof?
All right, man. It's great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you back in. All right, let's get things started. You know, the Jerry Sandusky trial got underway this week. The former Penn State assistant football coach is accused of sexually abusing minors, and the testimony has been horrifying. A lot of witnesses say Sandusky abused them for years. Now, people are asking if they could have done more, even football star LeVar Arrington.
Well, let me explain this for people who may not know the whole story. LeVar Arrington is a former NFL linebacker for the Washington Redskins and the New York Giants. But before that, he played for Penn State. And one of the witnesses talked about wearing Arrington's jersey and having photos taken with him. The context is this, that, you know, that was part of the lure of like how Sandusky kind of lured kids into his web is by taking them to fun things and introducing them to fun people. But Arrington wrote this really powerful blog just about how he didn't know, that he somehow didn't pick up that something was wrong. And this is what he had to say during a Washington Post internet show. I'll just play a short clip.
I'm just continuously going through my mind, like, was there something I could have done? Is there something that I missed? Like, dang, I knew the kid was upset, but he's a part of Second Mal. Second Mal is troubled kids.
Right.
So I'm just thinking the kid is troubled, and that's why he's here. Let me try to be a light to this kid, you know, not even knowing that what's going on is happening on the ground we're standing on.
Wow. Thanks, Michelle. So that seems to be the question everybody's asking. What more could have been done? Professor Butler, I understand you mentor foster kids. How do you gauge when something serious is going on or it's just dealing with teen angst?
It's hard, man. You know, I feel LeVar's pain. I volunteer as a mentor for foster kids, and it's true. Teenage boys are often sullen. Are they sullen because they're going through something horrible, or is just sullen teenage angst? It's hard to know, especially if you don't have those personal conversations. And frankly, men often don't have those kinds of intimate conversations. It seems kind of touchy-feely, but now we know the cost of not having them can be can be tragic, man. These kinds of consequences.
Pablo Torre, Mr. Sports Illustrated, what do you think? Should people like Arrington or other people in Penn State football family feel any responsibility at all?
Well, I think it's clear that this is something harder than, you know, turning a blind eye. You know, this isn't a set of Good Samaritans who kind of turn their backs, or would be Good Samaritans who turn their backs. I think with this case, the thing that makes it all the more torturous for somebody who missed it is that it's clear now in this trial that Jerry Sandusky wasn't this brilliant master of disguise, this covert criminal mastermind. You know, he was a guy who was, if anything, who was too obvious in some ways. The book he wrote was called Touched. He wrote love letters, which have emerged in trial. He had a waterbed. You know, all of these things that are so over the top. And that's even beyond just the sheer witness accounts of it happening in showers and public places. You have janitors, assistant coaches, everybody brushing past this. I think it's not just – the part about this case that's so staggering is that it's not just one guy who could have done something, a LeVar Arrington. It's 10, 12, who knows how many people who brushed by this, and all of them separately decided, for the reason Professor Butler said, maybe to keep it to themselves.
Well, you know, but I think that what's troubling here and what's hard here is that on the one hand you see, and I don't think having a waterbed means you're, you know, in a crime. I'm just saying,
well,
I don't think that's not a marker of being, I mean.
Yeah, let's go ahead and put that out there.
Not that that's the most important thing about it. I'm just saying that the issue is, I think a lot of adults are worried about an overreaction, an overcorrection. I mean, there are a lot of jurisdictions now where, say, teachers and other caregivers of kids can't hug a kid. Well, if you've ever worked with kids, especially little kids, sometimes a kid needs a hug. So then adults are worried about, you know, the overcorrection. So perhaps they don't, you know, push. It's like, it's almost like you can't figure out what's the right middle ground here between kind of overreacting and then causing harm by not letting adults step in when they need to step in, and then underreacting, which seems to be the case here. You know, Jimmy, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Gotham, you want to weigh in here?
I think the concern is valid because, for example, we're trying to start a boxing gym in Northwest D.C., and one of the first things you encounter is this fundamental question about trust. Who can you trust around kids with no supervision? In my view, almost no one. I think that's what this trial really shows. I think that one of the things about them is the victims are chosen, specifically people who are unlikely to report this. That is why they're victims. They go to the second mile because they don't have anywhere else to turn to. And then he's preying on the most vulnerable types of people. I can understand the soul-searching of someone like LeVar Arrington. I don't think he's responsible necessarily personally, but it speaks to when we're helping kids, what are we doing? Are we giving them a good afternoon, a good experience? Or are we trying to understand what they're dealing with? And I think that we have to ask those questions.
Mm. You know what I like about this, though? I'll say if there's one good thing to come out of this really disturbing, really terrible situation, I think you used the right word, Jimmy, which is horrifying, is that, you know, I have both, you know, girls and a boy. And one of the things I appreciate is like that now I think maybe now people will pay attention to what's going on with boys.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that, you know, you're just your tendency is to be vigilant when it comes to your daughter, not letting your daughter just go to anybody's house or the piano teacher or whatever, and just being more careful about where the boys, it's like, oh, go on out there. You know,
yeah, that's a great
and
point.
I just think that if it raises the level of concern about the circumstances we put the boys in, I think that, you know, this will never change what's happened to these young men.
Mm.
But at least that lesson will be learned, Jimmy.
I don't know. For me as a parent, you know, I've always been opposed to, you know, the culture of fame where, you know, you let your kids spend the night over somebody's house because they got a bunch of monkeys and they sang on a couple pop records or, you know, they run a ball up and down the field. I'm not down with that. You my kid can't spend the night over your house because you run the ball up and down the field. You know, as a matter of fact, I wonder in this day and age, before you mentor kids, I wonder should there be some kind of training you should have to go through, some kind of certification. You know, just because you're on television, Flavor Flav is not qualified to watch your kid for the night. Just FYI, you know. I mean, so just because you're on TV or the Kardashians or Snooki, just because you're on TV, it's kind of fame ball.
Or wear a clerical collar. Let's just say
that doesn't make you a mentor. You know,
but a lot of these kids, they just don't have any men in their lives. That's the problem, and you can't blame their moms for wanting to expose them to like a adult role model, somebody who's responsible.
But uncle.
Yeah. So everybody, we got to step up. We can't leave it to the celebrities or the football coaches. I think, you know, every normal guy who can do this has a role to play.
Yeah, what about big brothers and big sisters? They got those everywhere. We need to get with that. And not just, like I said, any yay who's on TV.
I think that's exactly the problem, is that the kind of people who could make a positive difference aren't always involved. And it's left to the people who really have ulterior motives occasionally who take issue. I mean, just this last week, the New York Times reported that the Horace Mann Private School in New York City was the site of some very similar sorts of abuses against some of the most elite young men in the country. And they didn't feel like they had anywhere to turn because it was a very male-dominated environment where you don't talk about that sort of victimization. So the kids have to feel like there's someone they can go to who's not going to expose them to their friends and make them feel like they're different and ostracized. I think an outlet that they can tell, a place they could go, a number they could call would make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
We're having our weekly visit to the barber shop. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, CQ editor Gautam Nagesh, law professor Paul Butler, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, well, let's move on to some good sports news, at least for Miami fans. The Miami Heat head on to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder last night in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. The score was 100-96. Pablo, people are calling LeBron James and Kevin Durant the best matchup since peanut butter and jelly, since Magic since Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. As the pro sports guy, what do you think? Go ahead.
Pablo. I got confused.
I'm sorry. Pablo.
Yeah. I think that's fair. You know, I think we should always have skepticism of those kind of lofty comparisons. But this is the first matchup where we could really put two guys on the boxing style heavyweight fight poster, LeBron versus Durant. Now, those guys are not alone. They have excellent teams around them. But in terms of an individual superstar comparison, this is the best since Magic and Bird in the 80s, in my opinion. It's of that vintage. And I don't think it's there yet. I think Magic and Bird was special because, number one, they played back in college. I mean, this thing dated before the pros, and there was a certain symmetry, obviously, with race, black and white. And LeBron and Durant, you know, they're phenomenal, obviously, the MVP contenders, and they have their other kind of dynamic going, which makes this compelling, which is that it's not black and white in terms of race, but in terms of the black hat and the white hat, the villain in LeBron James and the Oklahoma prairie-raised everybody's favorite young man, Kevin Durant. And so I think that's compelling.
So it's kind of like Luke and Darth Vader almost.
A little bit.
Yeah,
bit. LeBron is what you don't want to be, it seems.
I'm sorry, I'm throwing over on the black is bad, white is good thing. Please, please, let it go. I'm sorry, I'm not having that.
And everything else that Pablo said, too, because the media is trying to spin it as like, oh, LeBron's the bad dude. What is he? Why is he bad? Because he's a free agent.
Because he likes himself.
Exactly. He took it under his control. And then we got this like country mouse thing versus the glitzy big city. But if you look at the owner, the guy who owns the Oklahoma City team, they're not the best dudes in the world. They're like conservative. They're funding all these sending all this money to Romney's campaign. So I just think that the way this is being spun is all wrong.
Well, step right, though, on that, because Kevin Durant is not a country mouse. He's from D.C. There's much love for him here. That kind of modest, you know, kind of.
Completely. He's humble, and I think people really appreciate that.
Whatever
you think about LeBron, the decision show has haunted him, I think, and people contrast that with Durant.
But this whole thing about humility good, flash is bad, is cultural, okay? Some of us like swagger. The fact that people have a big personality.
I hate to talk about race, but it's also race because black men, we have this swagger. Some of us do, but it's not looked upon all that well. We get more cred when we're humble.
I was just telling my wife this other day. I cannot remember the last time I saw in print anybody suggesting that a white man be humble. I haven't seen that in the last 10 years. Is that just me? When was the last time you, Paul? Well, when was the last time you heard somebody suggest the white guy be humble?
Let me help Pablo out here. Pablo said,
"So I'm from the Midwest, and there's a certain value in modesty."
I'm from Cleveland, and we got swagger in Cleveland. We make swagger. Are you serious?
Absolutely, and Detroit has swagger, I think, too. You know, it is a cultural thing. They're playing the two sides against each other. I think LeBron is the most popular player in the NBA, so clearly people appreciate him. There's a lot of haters also. People don't like his success. They don't like that he's always – it seems to come easy to him. Kevin Durant maybe has a little bit of the underdog thing.
That's his fault.
But, you know, I personally am rooting for the Thunder, but I don't think LeBron did anything wrong in terms of going to the Heat or anything like that. And it's a little tired now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of boxing, which we've been kind of doing, Pablo, I do hear what you were saying. Pablo's saying,
sorry,
I'm just reporting, dudes.
I can't hear you from underneath this bus you ran me over.
Sorry. Not really. Gotham, though, people are still hot about the talking about that Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley fight last week where Bradley was declared the winner, but CompuBox stats show that Pacquiao outpunched Bradley significantly. Even the opponent sounds surprised by the judge's decision. Let me just play a short clip. This is first Pacquiao and then Bradley.
I respect the decision, but 100% I believe that I won the fight, but it's okay.
We need to definitely do this again in November. And, you know, let's make it more decisive.
Wow. All right. Thanks, Michelle. All right. Now, Gotham Nagesh, this is your joint right here. This is where you get down. You're the founder of the boxing and mixed martial arts website, Stiff Jab. So tell us, was Pacquiao robbed?
In my opinion, yes. And that's an opinion that's commonly shared across the boxing world. There are a few notable exceptions, but something like 48-3 of writers surveyed by a colleague of mine, a writer I respect, said they had Pacquiao winning this fight. Mm-hmm. Bad decisions are common in boxing.
Right.
You see someone getting robbed every other week, but you rarely see the A side, the big money fighter like Pacquiao, lose a decision in what is essentially his home turf, Las Vegas. So there are a lot of questions about this decision, and it's motivating people to call for some change, which happens usually, but people move on. In this case, they may not move on so quickly because it is Pacquiao.
Hmm. People always want to change when it doesn't go their way, right?
But what's the rationale for it? I mean, Pablo, is there any defense? I mean, do the judges have any defense of their decision here? I don't
know. The fight was, I think, if a fight is close, it's not like you can say it's impossible for a person, especially someone who's sitting at ringside, to get it completely right. I mean, these things happen. I think Pacquiao won the fight. I think the larger issue is that, you know, boxing in a perverse way, needed something like this to happen. You know,
absolutely.
It's way more interesting that this happened than Manny Pacquiao destroyed Timothy Bradley, as a lot of people expected him to. It's way more interesting to talk about boxing, even in the way that we talk about a Kim Kardashian, you know, the reality TV star who we can't stop talking about, despite the fact that it's so frustrating and so at times vacuous. You know, boxing has this existential crisis going on, but it's, you know, it's good from the PR perspective, from the discussion perspective, that we still have it in our mouths.
Well, you know, quantity of punches doesn't equal quality of punches, as far as I'm concerned. And that said, you know, controversy, like you said, Pablo, is good for the sport. On to the rematch. That's what I'm about.
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did.
And you thought?
I thought it could have went either way. I'm
really?
Sorry. Yeah.
Based on what? I'm just saying.
Based on my two eyes,
because
Michelle.
You missed the fact that the guy got, you were getting a sandwich every time that Pacquiao.
The best part
hit.
Was that Timothy Bradley showed up at his presser in a wheelchair.
Oh dear.
That was the just putting everything in perspective.
Right. Paul, you want to weigh in on that?
You know, it reminds me of Gore, of Bush versus Gore, because Gore won that one on points too, but the Supreme Court lost it to
Bush. Oh,
he went
there.
He went right there. And.
So, you know, stuff happens. There's going to be a rematch. They're both going to make zillions of dollars. Again, keeping on the same theme, Manny endorsed Romney over Obama, so I'm not feeling him either.
Though he is very close to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid as well. So he's got – he's a good politician. He's a congressman in the Philippines, so he knows how to play both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
But I love that Paul's consistent. He goes right there.
Right.
All the campaign contributions right there in Fox. Okay, Jimmy Israel is a writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor at film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. And Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He was with us from our NPR studios in New York. Gautam Nagesh is an editor for Congressional Quarterly and founder of the sports website Stiff Jab. And Paul Butler is a law professor at the George Washington University, heading to Georgetown next month. He's also a former federal prosecutor. Paul, Gautam, and Jimmy here in Washington, D.C. Thank you all.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.